Part two of this chapter is specifically on acquiring technology assets. And we're going to start with a quote from the Council on Competitiveness. They said that for the past 25 years, we have optimized our organizations for efficiency and quality. Over the next quarter of a century, we must optimize our entire society for innovation. As industry and business have evolved, so have the means of acquiring technology to improve the effectiveness and productivity of human economic endeavors. Chandler wrote an article where he identified the essential role of an integrated learning base in supporting the long-term success of companies' innovation programs. He studied the emergence of the consumer electronics and computer industries to determine why some companies were extremely successful in the short term, but completely lost their position over time. The learning base to which he refers is synonymous with the acquisition of new technologies and internal human expertise in applying these technologies. The ability to apply these within a company was one significant differentiator between those companies that survived as producers of electronics and those that failed because they had no real internal integrated competitive advantage. Chandler offered RCA as a classic example of this pattern of growth and decline. RCA held patents for a number of important electronic components and manufacturing methods. However, instead of developing internal capabilities to turn these into products, the company chose to make its money by licensing these patents to other companies. As a result, RCA never developed their own internal expertise with the technology. And when advances came, they came to other companies and left RCA holding the rights to outdated technology. It was primarily the Japanese companies that had licensed RCA's IP who developed the next generation of technologies and methods and used them to pull the entire electronics industry away from America and into Japanese companies. In a knowledge economy, the ability to acquire, organize, and apply new knowledge is an essential ingredient in effective innovation. Christensen and Rayner in 2003 stated that corporate IT systems and the CIOs who administer them figure among the most important contributors to failure in innovation. He emphasized that ready access to useful and customized information is a prerequisite for growing and changing an organization. Infoware, as we discussed earlier, is not just a controlled body of knowledge that enters with a new employee or is created through internal activities. Instead, it's a global environment that extends far beyond the boundaries of the organization. It ingests and manages as much infoware and technoware as possible. That's an important part of stimulating the innovation process. This occurs by sending employees to trade shows, industry trade publications, experimenting with competitors' products, looking for inspiration in other industries, and a number of similar approaches to the acquisition of information. Technoware is often seen as being the most sophisticated because it has the power to do more work. Its efficiency in reducing materials and energy, its ability to contain self-guidance and control, and its ease of use and reduced impact on the environment place technoware in the limelight of executive attention. But without humanware, this technoware is non-functional and useless. Though technoware often contains encoded humanware, it still requires human control and application, which requires human knowledge and skill. Additionally, orgoware is the structure that is able to bring together the right technology and the right human skills with a market opportunity. Shifting IBM from a company primarily focused on computer hardware to one that was centered on services required pulling together all four of the resources that we identified. IBM had to master the technology of the new open systems environment, which required applying their humanware expertise, their technoware capabilities, and their infoware licenses. They also had to recreate the organization so that it could operate effectively around services instead of products. The focus on humanware, technoware, infoware, and orgaware is often aligned with the phase that a corporation is in its development and growth. During the startup phase of a company, the humanware assets are the most important. These are skills and knowledge in Leonard Barton's model and resources in Christensen and Overdorf's model. The unique skills of individuals are usually the foundation of the company's ability to compete in an industry. As the company expands, it uses its financial capital to purchase technoware that will allow it to extend the productivity of its humanware and reach a larger market. These are the technical systems in the Leonard Barton model and still the resources in the Christensen model. And as it runs into stiff competition and its expansion carries it into areas that it cannot excel at, the organization realizes the need to consolidate. It must apply infoware about the market and customers and suppliers and competitors to determine what its unique place should be. This selection leads to a definition of its values and norms, and the definition of what it will pursue and what its own measures of success will be. If the company survives, it can potentially enter the market leadership phase of its life cycle. And in this phase, it's the orgaware that is the most important, the creation of an organizational structure that can operate the business independent of the individual humanware and technoware assets that were previously the foundations of the company. Throughout this evolution, as a category of technological assets moves from a dominant position to a supporting position, it also moves from being a competitive competency of the organization to being an operational capability. These assets are always important, but they become woven into the fabric of the company, to use Pralahad's analogy, and are part of the stable foundation of capabilities rather than the front-end transformative force of the organization. So the four categories of technology assets are essentially resources, both in defending current market positions and in usurping those positions from the competitors. Bergelman asserts that from a competitive strategy point of view, technology can be used defensively to sustain achievable advantage in product differentiation or cost, or it can be used offensively as an instrument to create new advantage in established lines of business or to develop new products and markets. Having achieved an advantage, technology assets are one essential ingredient in defending that position. Operational efficiencies are necessary, but these can be copied. The earlier quote from the U.S. Council on Competitiveness emphasized the need for innovation to remain competitive, and their report focused on the application of new technology and investment in R&D as a key part of innovativeness. Christensen and Raynor attempted to identify actions that senior executives must take to lead this innovation, and these actions aligned very well with the THIO, the THEO framework, that is at the center of this paper that we're reading right now. First, executives should stand astride of the interface between sustaining and disruptive innovation for their organization. They should examine the threats of new technology. They should study and apply technoware and the need to maintain the capabilities of their current organization, which is fostering humanware. And second, they should champion new processes for generating disruptive growth, which is advancing orgaware. And third, they should sense when circumstances are changing, and they should teach others to recognize these signs as well, which is monitoring the infoware and mentoring the humanware. Authors like Von Hippel and Chesborough both pointed to an additional dimension in this model for managing innovation, one that extends beyond the boundaries of the company. Von Hippel points out that there are leading edge users of every product. These people and organizations press the product to its limits and often end up inventing modifications that are beyond what is delivered in the original product. At the broader consumer base of these products, they evolve and they become the discoverers of the needs for modification to these products. Therefore, a company needs to tap into these leading edge users and create partnerships with them and bring their modifications into the product research and design process. Chesbrough's ideas concerning open innovation talk to the need to leverage the capabilities of multiple organizations to create new products. He observed that no company possesses the expertise necessary to innovate in all the domains that apply to its products. Therefore, partnerships are necessary to maintain a lead over more insular competitors. These ideas extend the management and optimization of the Theo framework beyond the boundaries of a single company. So there's an early starter advantage in all of this. Technological advancements form an S-curve in which early applications provide small and incremental improvements, but these soon lead to significant or exponential improvements in the middle part of the S-curve. During this exponential phase, it's tempting to believe that the technology will continue to improve business operations or productivity or efficiency or cost savings at this accelerated rate. But as the potential within each improvement is fully realized, its contributions taper off significantly to an incremental tail. And when an industry is in a stagnant phase, it will remain in that incremental improvement tail for significant periods, perhaps years. Luckily, complex organizations have a number of opportunities to apply new technology assets and to jump onto the early phases of an entirely new S-curve, where they can take advantage of another exponential phase in that curve. This makes it very important for a company or a country to adopt and apply new technologies early enough that the explosive financial benefits are still available to pay for the startup costs, which may be significant. If a company or a country waits too long to apply a new technology, then it may find itself in a position where the profits available cannot overcome the startup costs. Once a company is established in an industry, it can benefit from multiple waves of technological improvement. In 2005, Moore pointed to the importance of applying innovative technologies throughout the life cycle of a company. During some phases, it's possible to innovate in the technoware components of the products. During others, it's possible to innovate in the orgaware or production phase of the process. And at other times, it's necessary to innovate in the humanware domain of the product or service. Innovation may emerge in many different parts of the organization, but it's unlikely that transformative changes will be continuous in any single one area. Instead, disruptions in one area will be followed by stability and standardization to make those changes into a repeatable part of the organization's operations. And while this standardization is occurring, disruptive innovation may emerge in one of the other domains that drive productivity and competitiveness. Microsoft has experienced the early starter advantage and has had to wrestle with the disruptions that have occurred within and around its operating systems business since then. Having successfully captured the desktop operating system market, Microsoft still had no control over the evolution of the definition of the operating system from the customer's perspective. So companies like Qualcomm and Netscape extracted the email client and the web browser from university labs and introduced them to the Windows customers. Microsoft missed the opportunity to introduce these tools themselves and had to catch up with the idea that they should reside side by side with every copy of the operating system. More recently, this early starter, Microsoft, is facing the same challenges from search engines, from media management programs and media editing suites, blogging tools, and a growing list of contenders that hope to create the next ubiquitous tool that belongs in the Windows operating environment. There's also a late starter advantage. Not all industries require a major investment to enter. They do not have a significant barrier to competitive entry, as Porter offered. When this is the case, it's possible for a late starter in the field to have an advantage over early starters. Early starters typically pay a premium price for equipment that is just being created that can take advantage of technological advancements. Early starters also take the largest risks in predicting market demand and experimenting with new production processes. And since technoware changes so rapidly, it's possible that the earlier starter will spend significant money and time pursuing failed products and markets. This may make it possible, even advantageous, for another company to start later, but hit the right market with the right product the first time out. Under these conditions, the late starter may outperform the early starter and capture a dominant position in the market. Apple's iPod was a fantastic example of this approach. They entered the MP3 player market 5 years after many of the early starters were already in. They had the advantage of understanding the approaches of dozens of existing competitors, and most of the necessary technology had already been created. Apple brought two new ingredients to the MP3 device. First was a massive internal hard drive that could store thousands of songs. And second was a superior user interface that appealed to a much larger portion of the consumer market. With these two advantages, they were able to consolidate a fractured market and capture 70% of the business, and they essentially redefined what an MP3 player should be. So in this paper, we've attempted to clearly identify the types of technology assets the company must acquire and apply in order to be successful in the marketplace. Numerous authors have talked about the importance of managing technologies and weaving the streams of technology together without really explicitly defining what these technologies were. Referring back to Christensen's definition of technology as, quote, a process that any company uses to convert inputs of labor, material, capital, energy, and information into outputs of greater value, we would suggest that managers must consider much more than just traditional R&D and the acquisition of new equipment that represent hard technology. Rather, a manager must leverage the power of humanware, technoware, infoware, and orgaware as described in this paper. And further, we believe that each of these plays a dominant role during a different phase of a company's life cycle. As an asset moves from a dominant position to a supporting position, it moves from a differentiating competency to an operational capability. A company cannot survive without creating a strong foundation of capabilities, but capabilities alone can often be duplicated by competitors, so it's difficult for them to continue to provide a competitive advantage, and therefore a company must continue to innovate with new technology assets throughout its life cycle.